that we have left. We want to talk right down to earth in a language that everybody here can easily understand.
Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para-X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
Supernatural. Metaphysical. Paranormal. You know, all those things you've been wondering about. Are you ready to go deeper into the realms of the unknown? I hope you've got your walking shoes on. Because life is an adventure. And this is the journey. Come on, let's go. Hello and welcome to the show, everyone. I'm Jen Cruz, your host tonight, and this is the Journey Radio Show. I am super excited about our guest tonight, and of course, we're going to try to talk a little bit about Bigfoot, so I'm going to show up as the She Squatchers tonight, and I'm waiting for my fellow teammate Jenna Grover to be on. She's having a little bit of technical difficulty, so my amazing producer Sarge is going to keep trying to get her on, so hopefully she'll jump in any minute now. Let me tell you a little bit about our super awesome guest. We've got Mike Nichols on tonight. He's an author, lecturer, guest on NPR's All Things Considered, member of the American Society for Psychical Research. Mike has taught classes in parapsychology for most of his life. In Kansas City, he taught graduate-level classes in parapsychology at UMKC Department of Psychology and was research assistant to renowned parapsychologist Robert Ashby. Although interested in all things of psi research, Mike has always been more drawn to ghosts, poltergeists, and hauntings, with a special emphasis in the historical trends of the research in these areas. Lately, he has been active in pioneering the use of random number generators as a research tool in the investigation of hauntings. So I am so, so thrilled to talk to Mike tonight. And he's been kind of keeping me in the dark a little bit about how he's using the random number generators. And he kind of put a little carrot in front of me and is leading me along into thinking that maybe, possibly, this is something we could bring into our Bigfoot research to see if there is a line perhaps between the flesh and blood Bigfoot and the paranormal woo-type Bigfoot situation, which is an interesting idea. So I'm really excited to hear more about that and hear about his research that he is really giving us the scoop on, because I don't think he's talked about it anywhere else out in the public yet. And before we bring Mike on, I see that Jenna is with us. Hi, Jenna.
Hallelujah, I made it on today. Oh, my goodness. Hello, Jen.
I'm so glad you joined us. So in time, we're gonna bring Mike on. I know we're excited to hear what he has to say. And I'm just going to tell y'all, Jenna used to want to be a parapsychologist growing up. So
yes, for many, 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 many years.
This is going to be super awesome for you. So without any further delay, let's bring Mike Nichols on. Hey, Mike, are you there?
I am here.
Hey, welcome Mike to the show.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, you got your walking shoes on?
Already I'm being led into the wilderness. Oh, no.
Well, good guys.
Yeah, good. That's the good journey.
Yeah, but I would need that.
I feel like you're guiding us tonight, since you've kept me pretty much in the dark about this random number generator research that you've been doing. And I'm just, people have been asking me, what is that all about? I'm like, don't know.
So you're saying I've been kind of a tease.
You are. You've been a tease, Mike. I'm just saying.
That's good. I like to keep you interested. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I thought maybe we'd get to that in the second half of the show, because I think I, instead of leading off with it, but you're right. This is the first time I've actually talked about it in public. And so your show tonight has the scoop on this.
I am so excited and awesome. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Very exciting. Very exciting. But, you know, you've had a long, I know you've had a really long career in the paranormal field and parapsychology. How did you first get interested in that?
Ah, well, that's an interesting story in itself. I grew up in the Midwest in a little town in Missouri called Carrollton, Missouri, population of about 5,000. And growing up, I was, I suppose I should go back a little further than that. I was kind of raised by my maternal grandmother, and she grew up in the Ozarks. And the Ozarks is so full of all kinds of stories about the paranormal. When I read the classic book, Ozark Magic and Superstition by Vance Randolph, it was kind of like sitting at my grandmother's knee all over again, because I grew up, you know, listening to her tell stories about ghosts. She'd had her own experiences about ghosts. It was a family thing. So I grew up thinking ghosts were a normal part of life. And it wasn't until I went to school and started talking about this with my other schoolmates that they were going, ah, there's no such thing as ghosts. And I took that as a challenge, you know. And I thought, well, if there really are such things as ghosts, then there should be scientific evidence to back it up. And I went to the local Carrollton Public Library and asked. I'd already found out that the field of study for this was called parapsychology. It is now. In its earliest days, it was called psychical research, but it's now called parapsychology. And I went in and I asked the librarian, do you have any books on parapsychology? And I was thrown out of the library by a librarian who felt that I was using words that she didn't understand and was to make her look like a fool. So anyway, I started getting books on my own on parapsychology and started doing my own, quote, investigations in Carrollton, Missouri. And I like to joke that, you know, when I was growing up, in a little town like that, you know where all the haunted houses are. I mean, it's just public knowledge. And so my research methodology at that time, I like to joke, consisted mainly of criminal trespass and breaking and entering.
Hey, you know, sometimes you have to do that. Not that I'm saying everybody to do that.
No.
But when you're young, you make... No, we don't do that.
We don't do that.
Make mistakes. Let me just take that back.
I know. It's a methodology I do not condone anymore. I want to make that very clear. But and I would get into these old abandoned houses and kind of wait around for something to happen. Nothing much ever did. But I kept on learning and kept on reading and kept on researching and finding out more and more about parapsychology and more about ghosts and more about apparitions. More and more about poltergeists and hauntings. And that was the part of parapsychology that I was most drawn to. So I followed that all through high school and even into college.
Very cool. And did you get all the people looking at you funny when you said you were into this? Because we get that all the time. But
yeah, pretty much. I think, you know, well, it's kind of, I kind of found people were polarized on the topic. They were either, it's like, ooh, that's really weird, get away from me, or it was the opposite. It was like, I'm fascinated, I want to learn more about that, you know, tell me more. So, but never any, oh, that's nice. You don't get that middle ground. It's one extreme or the other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. They're either really interested in it or they think it's something crazy and they want nothing to do with you, right?
Or the work of the devil. It's evil.
Oh, my gosh.
Keep it away, you know. And I should probably mention that I was raised in the Roman Catholic tradition, so which meant that I went to a Catholic grade school from first to eighth grade. I was taught by nuns, and, you know, for them, this was all very evil stuff. But luckily, that didn't really take when it came to me. I don't know why, but I just, you know, when they would tell me it was evil, I had already had a few psychic experiences of my own, you know, not nothing to write home about. Just stuff like knowing who was going to be on the phone when the phone rang and stuff like that. Enough to know that psychic stuff was real. And I knew it wasn't evil. And nothing they could say or do would convince me that it was evil. And plus, I had my grandmother. So when I would get through with the school day, I would go over to my grandmother's house and I would tell her what the nuns had been talking about that day. And she would laugh and then tell me about how things really were.
Sorry, I think that's awesome.
It is. And she was interesting because my grandmother, you know, when she was a young woman in our hometown, Carrollton, growing up, my grandfather was prominent in the town. He was on the city council and so forth. And so my grandmother was a little bit, I won't say she was embarrassed about her background in the Ozarks, but she was careful to keep that kind of under wraps. And even in raising her own children, like my mother, she didn't talk much about her interest in things paranormal. So, but the time, you know, I was growing up and I was her grandkid, she was an old lady by then, and she didn't care what anybody might think about it. And so I would go over to her house and listen to her, and I would come home and tell my mom what Grandma had said. And my mom was like, "What?" You know, she was like,
"Oh, Grandma, I'm glad. I would have loved to meet your grandma."
She was awesome. She was totally awesome. But my mom could hardly believe this stuff that she was telling me. So it was one of those things where it kind of skipped a generation. And I was just in the right place at the right time, I guess you could say.
Wow, that's awesome. That's awesome. I hope you take the time to write down the stories that your grandmother told you.
I should do that. I really should. Yeah. There were a lot of, like I said, family stories about ghosts and such. So it was great.
That would be awesome to hear all those the old stories that were passed down. That would be amazing.
Yeah.
And if she had any Bigfoot stories down in the Ozarks.
Yeah, really?
You know, that's a good question. I don't recall her ever talking about anything like that. There were stories about spectral lights, you know, like the Joplin spook light, of course. I think David Glidden has kind of cornered the market on that. And lots of other kinds of things that, like, apparitions appearing in cemeteries. A spectral train that used to go through the town she was in. That sounds like a line out of Ghostbusters, but it really was true. And so, yeah, she had all kinds of interesting stories to talk about.
Wow, that's fun. That's really fun.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes. Oh, exciting stuff. Exciting stuff.
And I do have to say, you have a great radio voice. Wow. I could listen to you all day.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
I consider that I'm very deeply complimented by that. I used to be a DJ, so I was an actual broadcast DJ from the time that I was in high school, actually. I had my own radio show when I was a freshman. Actually went and back in those days, you had to take the FCC third class radio operators license test in order to broadcast with Element 9 broadcast, license. So, I did that when I was in, just a freshman in high school. And
wow.
It was a lot of fun. I just always have, I told Jen before we started that I'm going to be totally at home in front of a microphone because I spent so much time there.
Isn't it wonderful? Well, I'm so glad I get to be on this discussion. So thank you, thank you, thank you for being on this show.
It's my pleasure. I'm glad to have you on this too.
Definitely.
I know Jenna was jealous because I got to visit with you at the Paracon and she really didn't. So this is her opportunity to get to know you a little bit better too.
Okay. I apologize, Jenna.
Hey,
I spirited Jen off. I admit it.
Yeah. Well, she's an amazing person. A lot of people do that. But, you know, we stay so busy at that booth. We've got so many people that come up and they want to share their stories and they want to ask questions and, you know, buy some T-shirts or, you know, just some jewelry. Honestly, I probably wouldn't have had time to talk to you, but I would have loved it. So, yeah, I'm taking this opportunity.
That was a wonderful experience for me. I had actually gone to KC Paracon as a guest the year before. And this is a story I've told too in some of my lectures, because I really wasn't sure what to expect. I'd never been to a paranormal convention before. And the night before it opened, it happened to be hosted in the Masonic Lodge, which was right next door to the apartment complex that I lived in. And I was coming home Friday night, and I saw a bunch of people sitting out on the half wall outside the entrance to the lodge there. And I thought, I bet those people are either the organizers or speakers or exhibitors at the convention. So I will just pull my car into the parking lot and walk up and introduce myself. And so I did that. I said, hello, my name is Mike Nichols, and I used to teach a graduate-level course in parapsychology at the University of Missouri at Kansas City. And all these mouths fell open, and one guy, I can't remember who it was, said, I've heard about parapsychologists, but I've never actually met one before. So we all had a good laugh, and I think initially they were kind of a little bit defensive, because I think they thought that I was going to diss what they were doing, going out on paranormal investigations and stuff because of my academic background. And nothing could have been further from the truth, because that's where I started. I mean, I think that's where all parapsychologists started originally. And I also think this is one of those rare fields in which the amateur investigator or researcher can still, come up with really compelling evidence and material that contributes to the field of parapsychology, even in an academic setting. So, and I think I kind of relieved them of any of their paranoia about my academic background, and then we were all good, you know.
Definitely.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, definitely. You're,
and then the next year, Jason, who, you know, organized the KC Paracon, asked me if I would be a speaker. And I said, yeah, because one thing that became immediately obvious was that even though these people were very interested in doing paranormal investigations, going into haunted houses and stuff, you could tell that their training had been kind of watching, you know, ghost hunter reality TV shows, and they didn't have any kind of a sense of history for parapsychology. And I thought, you know, this is sad, because these people really ought to know their own history, because it's a wonderful history. The first, you know, really major society for investigating paranormal events was the Society for Psychical Research in London, which was formed in 1882. And so we've got 136 years of research based on what they have done. And a lot of it had to do with ghosts, apparitions, poltergeists, hauntings, and all the rest. And I thought, okay, this year I will do a lecture that hopefully kind of bridges that gap between what paranormal investigators are doing in the field now and what the historical background of parapsychology is all about. Because it's an amazing history with people like Sir Oliver Lodge, Arthur Conan Doyle, who wrote Sherlock Holmes, Oscar Wilde. All these people were members of the Society for Psychical Research. And so I love to talk about the history of the field.
Wow, that's amazing. I've not heard a lot about the history of the field, so that is fascinating stuff.
It's great.
Definitely. And I was just going to ask, what's the best place for people who are amateur investigators maybe to find out some of this information?
Well, of course, I would encourage anybody to look into the Society for Psychical Research, and there is also the American Society for Psychical Research, and they started only 2 years later than the British Society, so that was 1884, and they published the Journal of the American Society for Psychical Research. That's a standard scientific peer-reviewed journal, and I think a lot of it is online if you want to, you know, follow the Google or Wikipedia, you can find the American Society for Psychical Research. And they just celebrated their 60th anniversary last year. And it's a worldwide organization. I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. It's not the it's not the ASPR, but it was the Parapsychological Association, the PA, which celebrated its 60th anniversary last year in Athens, Greece. And they had they presented papers at the I think it was the I'm trying to remember it was a very prestigious hotel there. The the Titania Hotel. And they presented papers in the Hypatia room, which I thought was appropriate.
So did you go? I'm just curious.
I did not get to go myself, but I would have loved to. I went online and read all the – I didn't read the papers because they published these all those things in their journal, of course. And the abstracts of their papers ran to over 70 pages, just the abstracts, not the papers themselves. But that gives you a little idea. People from all over the world are doing research in parapsychology today, in academic parapsychology.
And isn't it wonderful that it's not taboo anymore, that it's completely accepted, that people are open to the idea where, you know, hopefully someday with Bigfoot, they'll be able to be open like that too.
Oh, I think so too. Yeah. One thing that though that we have to contend with in the United States is that research in parapsychology has kind of disappeared from our universities. I don't think it's even possible to get a degree in parapsychology anymore in the United States. I may be wrong about that, but last time I checked, that was the case. And the reason for that, and it's the same in Russia, it's the same in China, because our governments had gotten interested in possible military and intelligence applications for parapsychology. Obviously, if ESP works, and it does, we've essentially proved that in laboratory experiments, then there is a big potential for using ESP, clairvoyance, telepathy, and so forth, for espionage, for intelligence gathering. I mean, we've got intelligence satellites that that can photograph something as small as a gerbil on the ground. But what we don't have are satellites that can look down and look at an office building and photograph inside that office building and look at a particular office in that building and then look in a particular file cabinet inside that office and then look in a particular file folder inside that drawer and look at a particular piece of paper and start reading the words on it. But we do have psychics that have been known to do this. That's way beyond what any spy satellite can do. As far as I'm aware, I'll probably get email tomorrow saying, no, we've got satellites that can do that.
Oh, no. No, we can do everything. Didn't
right.
you know? Well, and I am really disappointed to find out that they don't offer that anymore.
No, they
because
don't.
Because that's, like Jen said, I was really interested in going into parapsychology. In fact, that's why I went into psychology in college.
Well,
but
same here. I had a double major in psychology and communications, and that was the reason. And it was with a specialization in parapsychology. It was as close as I could get. But unfortunately, that has all dropped into – once the military came in and started working with this, we had things like Stanford Research Institute became SRI so they could accept government funding from the DOD. I'm going to start sounding like – you know, the conspiracy theorists out there, but, you know, they've got a point because all of this stuff suddenly was classified in the United States and China and Russia. Now, other countries in Europe are not like that. For example, Germany is very strong in parapsychological research today, and they still have people, scientists that are doing papers and presenting and lots of other places, lots of other countries as well. But we still have this kind of black ops thing going on where a lot of I don't think parapsychology research has ended in the United States. It's just gone covert and it's all black ops. It's all, under private foundations now, and we don't hear about it. And that's sad, because that means it's not available in scientific journals, in peer-reviewed journals. It's not getting to the public the way it needs to get to, the way it used to.
I agree 100%. There's no access to it. And we need access to that, because the people that do have abilities, really, I mean, that could help them kind of sway them to make, you know, certain, I shouldn't say certain decisions about what they want to do with their abilities.
Exactly. Exactly.
Do you think somebody should have psychic abilities to go into parapsychology?
That's an interesting question. There have been people who have psychic abilities. I'm thinking of the great medium Eileen Garrett, who was not only a great psychic in her own right, but she was also a parapsychologist. It's kind of hard to bridge that gap, because, you know, Eileen Garrett herself said that, you know, when she would go into trance states and so forth, even she did not remember what would happen when she was in trance. And she came up with some of the most evidential material as far as mediumistic work in the field. For example, some of the drop-in communicators at her seances. The R101 case is a brilliant case where she was in trance in the middle of a seance, and all of a sudden this spirit breaks in and says he's Captain Irwin and the pilot of a dirigible called the R101 that had crashed. And this was long before anybody had found the wreckage or anything. And he was absolutely desperate to get this information through Eileen Garrett to tell. And all of a sudden, all of this information about gas compartments and ballast and weight ratios and stuff came through, stuff that Eileen would have had no idea about. And he was desperate to get this through because the sister ship to the R101, the R102, was going to be launched not much later, and it had the same design flaws. So if it had been launched, it probably would have crashed too. So this is a wonderful case. Yeah, I mean, there was absolutely no connection between Eileen and this drop-in spirit that came through at her seance. And we've got tons of examples of drop-in communicators through mediums. And some of those, to me, are among the most compelling amount evidence, I guess you could say, in support of the whole concept of survival research, life after death. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So putting the psychics or the psychic mediums to work alongside of the scientific aspect of parapsychology, investigating that.
Oh,
those
yeah.
Things kind of go together really well.
I think they absolutely do. In fact, to me, whenever I go into a, quote, haunted house, I want to have all the technical stuff there, you know, that all the paranormal investigators typically use, all the doodads and you know, EMF meters and all the, you know, all the rest, ultrasonic, as much as we can to do that. But we also need the human element. We also need people who are psychic. We need people who are sensitive, because sometimes there's that overlap where we get the EVP or, you know, whatever, the stray image that turns up on the thermal cameras or whatever, and at the same time a psychic, maybe not even on site, comes up with the same information. That kind of correlation is extremely important. It's the kind of corroboration you need when doing this kind of research.
Very good.
Yeah, I totally agree. And there's never not going to be a need for human. Machines cannot do everything. I don't care what they say, but I believe there's always going to be a need in this particular field for humans. So
absolutely,
I had to put it out there.
I couldn't agree more.
Yay! Well, we won't be ruled out by self-ordering things at fast food places. That's for sure, Jenna.
That's for sure.
All right. Well, we're at the half mark of the show, so we're going to have to take a quick 2-minute break. So won't you stay tuned, and we'll be right back with parapsychologist Mike Nichols. Stay tuned, everyone.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
Demons. Vampires. Werewolves. Skinwalkers. All of this and more. Sunday nights at midnight on the Staring Into the Abyss radio show.
Secret of the world that all things subsist and do not die, but only retire a little from sight and afterwards return again. Nothing is dead. People find themselves dead and endure the mock funerals and mournful obituaries. And there they stand, looking out the window, sound and well, in some new and strange disguise. This secret must be told to the world, and they must tell it. Because they're not dead. We know this, and we'll prove it. So join Mike and Dave every Monday night at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central for the Odyssey Files, only on Para-X.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. This is the Journey Radio Show, and I'm Jen Cruz, your host tonight. And, of course, we're showing up as the She Squatchers. So I've got my fellow teammate Jenna Grover on the line with me. And so when we're not live on the air, you can catch us on our website at thejourneyradioshow.com. And please do check out our other website, shesquatchers.com. And give us a like on Facebook and follow what we're doing there for all the latest and greatest things going on in our world. So tonight we've got a super awesome special guest, Mike Nichols, parapsychologist. And he's telling us all about his career and parapsychology. And he's going to talk about his pioneering project of random number generators and the using those in paranormal investigations. So without further delay, let's welcome back Mike Nichols to the show. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Thank you very much.
Yes. Yes. Welcome back. And, you know, I know that we could probably talk to you for hours and never ever run out of things to say.
What she's really saying is that I would never shut up, and that's true.
Oh no, she talks a bit too. I think you guys are both very good talkers. I'm not, though. I'm not a talker.
She lies. Some people are not.
Some people are not talkers.
Well, I told a little tale there. I'm actually a pretty big talker too, so could be days.
It's lucky that you get to talk at all, Mike, for real.
It's true. Jen and I really have to put ourselves on mute just to stop from talking.
Well, I'm flattered that you would allow me the time to do some talking.
Yes, yes. Well, that's why we're here. We're here to listen and take in all that you have to share. And like we said earlier, Mike's been a big tease about this Pioneer project that he's got going on.
And as I was telling Jen earlier, she has got the scoop on this because this is really the first time I've talked about this in public. And it's exciting to me. It's something I've been wanting to do for a long time. Let's see, where should I start with this? I guess I should start when I was asked to be a speaker at this year's KC Paracon. I went out to dinner with Jason and Brandon, and who put on the event. And I was talking about how when I was young, I used to do a lot of paranormal investigation. And Jason turned to me and said, well, what would it take to get you back in the field again? And I said, you know, probably nothing could do that, with the possible exception of working with random number generators. And they went, what? And so then I had to explain what this was all about. And it's true. I don't think there's anything that would have drawn me back into the field with the exception of this. And I beg the indulgence of, you know, your listening audience, because this kind of has a technical and elongated backstory. But you kind of have to know what my inspirations for this were. And there are three. One of them was the movie Ghostbusters, because you've seen Ghostbusters, right? Yes, I'm seeing nodding. Okay.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay.
Sorry,
good.
See, I was on mute again. I got to stop that.
Okay. Okay, well, the scene where they're in the library and Egon pulls out his PK valence meter at right before the ghost appears, and I'm thinking, what is that thing that he's holding in his hand? What could it possibly be measuring? And that got me thinking to my early years of interest in parapsychology, and one of my heroes in the field was a man named William Rohl, who was head of the Psychical Research Foundation, the PRF, in Durham, North Carolina. Now, William Rohl was a research associate of J.B. Rhine, who is considered the father of American parapsychology. But Rohl was different because he was interested primarily in investigating hauntings. And he came out in 1971 with a seminal book called The Poltergeist, in which he summed up pretty much everything we know about modern poltergeist activities in houses, and was one of the people who was one of the main supporters of the idea that the poltergeist is probably not a what's the word? Not representative of a discarnate spirit, but is probably some kind of PK or psychokinetic energy surrounding a living person that is at the site. Quite often we call these a focus person or a PK agent or poltergeist agent. And there is a typical, I guess what you might say, kind of profile for a poltergeist agent. Usually it's somebody who has just reached adolescence, which has led some people to think that it may be some kind of repressed sexual energy. It's also, it can be somebody who has, well, as Rohl talked about in the Miami case, very famous poltergeist case, where a young immigrant worker named Julio was the center of poltergeist activity in a warehouse where lots of objects were flying around and crashing, and there was all this stuff like ashtrays and coffee mugs that said "Welcome to Miami" and so forth. And he was kind of typical in that there was a lot of repressed anger in his profile. He didn't like his job, but he couldn't express that anger because he was in the country illegally. And he was afraid that if he expressed it, you know, he would be deported. Consequently, what happened was the poltergeist energy suddenly cut loose in that warehouse, which is a real playground for a poltergeist, and things started flying. And it kind of literally broke the tension. So when Rohl started investigating what objects were moved, and the direction of the object movements and how many objects moved in relationship to how close they were to Julio, he found a relationship that was beyond statistically significant. It was, you know, only Julio was connected with these object movements in this way. And it led Professor Rohl to hypothesize what he called a psi field, which was in operation around Julio. Now, I should explain that Julio did not understand that he was the focus of this energy. He had no idea that the energy was coming from him. But the objects tended to, most objects moved were the ones closest to him. The fewer objects moved were the ones farthest from him and so forth. And they tended to move in a clockwise, I think clockwise or counterclockwise? I don't remember now. Counterclockwise, I think. Direction around him, almost like a vortex field. And it led Rohl to hypothesize what he called a psi field in a poltergeist case. And I thought that was very, very interesting. Now, other researchers, like Dr. Ian Stevenson at the University of Virginia, came along and argued that poltergeists are not always living agents, that there are other cases where poltergeists seem to be based around discarnates or spirits of the dead. And there are actually differences in the two types of poltergeist activity. In living agent poltergeist activity, objects moved tend to be smaller, like ashtrays and coffee mugs and things like that. With discarnate agents, oftentimes the objects moved are big. We're talking furniture. We're talking, you know, big beds or dressers, couches, things of that sort. And the characteristic of the object movements are different because, like in living agent poltergeists, they seem to be kind of randomly thrown around. But in discarnate agency, they seem to be carried, or sometimes a certain person is targeted and the objects are thrown at a particular person. So you can actually, Dr. Stevenson did a map that was, or not a map, a chart, a table that was published in the Journal of the American Society for Psychical Research, what we call JASPER. And it talked about all of these differences, and it was absolutely brilliant. So I think the jury is still out on what causes poltergeists. In fact, it may be both. We may have a case, just like the word ghost. You know, people use the word ghost, and it's really an umbrella term. I think it covers a lot of different human experiences, and I think possibly poltergeist does too. So anyway, this was the first bit of, I guess, inspiration to me for this work that I'm doing. The second bit of inspiration was from what's called the Global Consciousness Project that came out of the Princeton Engineering Anomalies Research, or PAIR, laboratories, and it was under the direction of Roger Nelson. And the Global Consciousness Project is very interesting because they wanted to see if they put random number generators around the globe and set them up at different universities all over the Earth, if those random number generators would react to times when people were all focused on a certain event in history. For example, when the verdict was read in the O.J. Simpson trial, suddenly all these random number generators kind of went off the rails. Because normally a random number generator does just what it says it does. It sits there spitting out random numbers. And there are mathematical formulas to analyze whether or not this stream of numbers is truly random. But suddenly, everybody was focused on the same thing. It's like human consciousness, that's why they called it the Global Consciousness Project, was all focused on one thing, the O.J. Simpson thing. And suddenly, the same thing happened with Princess Diana's funeral. Everybody was focused on that. And suddenly the random number generators go off the rails and they're not generating random numbers anymore. And of course, the parade example of this was 9/11. You can imagine. And when everybody was glued to their TVs watching what was happening in New York. And what's really interesting was that the random number generators all started to go off the rails about an hour before the first plane hit the first building. Let that sink in.
Wow.
What would explain that?
Well, there are a couple of theories. Some people say that, you know, the plans for 9/11 were already in the works. People were already moving to execute what happened there. So maybe the random number generators picked that up. And I'm speaking in a very metaphorical sense here. We don't know actually what random number generators react to. But there is a correlation. I'm not saying there's causation. I have to be very careful about this. There is a correlation. The other thing is that we know that people do have precognition, right? So maybe people precognitively were already aware that something major was going to happen, and their emotions, their thoughts, their focus, even subconsciously, there was precognition about 9/11, and already the random number generators were off the charts. So my idea, based on these inspirations, was to do it at the local level. and take a random number generator into a haunted house. I mean, because think of it. This might be, again, this might have been what Egon was holding in his hand and called his PK valence meter. You know, what is, you know, the probability that an apparition will appear? It's very, very unlikely. What is the probability that an object will be tossed across the room by a poltergeist? The probability is extremely low. It would happen by chance, not very often. You don't look at an object that sails across the room and say, okay, what are the odds of that happening by chance? It just doesn't happen by chance. So if there is such a thing as, and again, I'm speaking metaphorically, if there is such a thing as a probability field in a haunted house, which might be the same thing as William Rowell's psi field, or at least the two things could overlap, then a random number generator placed in the vicinity of a haunted house would possibly react, just like those ones did at 9/11, to something as improbable as the apparition appearing or the poltergeist object flying across the room. So my idea was to take this into a local setting and see what happens. And that's what I've been doing.
Okay, now I'm on the edge of my seat. What happened when you did this?
All right. Definitely. The first time I did it was basically a trial, a test run, as it were, right after Kansas City Paracon. We did an investigation at the Kearney Harris House in Kansas City, and I got three different anomalistic probability readings from my random number generator that night. And the first two that I could see didn't correlate to any other paranormal activity within the house, because what I wanted to see basically was, if I suddenly got an anomalistic reading from the RNG, then would that correlate to something else paranormal happening, like an EVP or an apparition or a movement of an object, or something like that? And I set as my, quote, alpha, I set that it would have to happen within 2 or 3 minutes of the RNG giving me this anomalistic reading. So during the 2 hours of that investigation, my RNG pinged me 5 times. The first two didn't seem to correlate with anything that I could tell was going on paranormally, but the last three did. We all happened to be in the same room. It was the children's room. Somebody asked the spirits of the children to jump on the bed, gave them permission to jump on the bed. And when there was a noise from the bed, there was also, within 2 minutes of that, a ping from my RNG. When we said we were done with the room and we were leaving, we were getting ready to go out the door. We had the door closed at that point. We said, you can open the door. And suddenly the doorknob on the room started to rattle. And once again, I got a ping on my RNG. And I can't remember what the third one was offhand, but there were three right there at the tail end of that investigation. And I thought that was, for a pilot study, I thought that was encouraging. So the next time that I did a real investigation was at the Beatty Mansion in St. Joseph, Missouri. And to me, it was a major success. I took the RNG in, and we went in. There were two investigative teams that were on that particular investigation that night. There was EVP from Kansas City. Tammy and Jim were leading that. And we also had PRI from Illinois, which was my friends Dan and Scott and Brandy. And they all came in and asked me if I would come with them and be part of their investigation. And I was very honored, very flattered to be a part of that. And I said yes. So we went in, and I'm going to have to check my notes, but bear with me. I had out of 19 anomalous probability events on my RNG, 12 of them out of 19, 12 of them occurred within 3 minutes of one or more, because sometimes they clustered, external paranormal events. Like we heard, for example, we all heard a scream from a woman in the house that night, and the recorders picked it up as well. So it was a disembodied voice. We heard the scream, you know, physically, as well as picking it up on the recorders. So that meant that 63% of the anomalous readings on my RNG corresponded with something paranormal happening in the house. Well, that's just amazing. Another way of looking at it is that saying out of 33 paranormal events that happened, 17 of those 33, and by the way, this was over a 6-hour investigation. So we were in that house for 6 hours. And during that time, 19, you know, I got 19 pings from my RNG, and 12 of them were within 2 or 3 minutes of something paranormal external to the RNG. So I am over the moon about this. It's almost as if you could use the random number generator to measure the, again, metaphorically speaking, the probability field in a haunted house and say, okay, I just had a ping for my RNG, so heads up, people, something may happen any second. Because remember those in the Global Consciousness Project, the RNGs went off the rails an hour before the planes hit the building, right? So I'm thinking this could even be predictive. So when I go into an investigation like I'm going to be doing on the 24th, again with PRI, with Dan and Scott and Brandy, we're going to all be hooked up. You know, we're all going to have radios. And if I have an event on the RNG, I'm going to key my radio and I'm going to say, I've had an RNG event. And that's going to tell all the researchers, heads up, because probability has dropped low within the house. The probability field has changed. Something may be about to happen. Heads up.
Wow. That's fascinating. I can't wait for you to do more and more and more of this to gather this data.
I know. I'm the same way.
You must be just going through the roof on this one.
I totally am. And, you know, as far as I know, it's a unique approach to investigating. I don't think anybody else is doing this. I know, too, I've been in touch, thanks to Tammy at EVP, I've been in touch with two other people that are doing RNG work in haunted houses, but their approach is slightly different because what they're doing is just taking the RNG into the haunted house and letting it run and seeing how many anomalistic readings they get during the haunted house as opposed to when it's not in a haunted house, which is also a valid approach. But my thing is to take it into the haunted house and see, okay, I'm going to see if the events on the RNG correspond to other paranormal events that the other researchers are picking up.
So do you think that the random number generators are being affected by the precognition of the investigators on site, or is it perhaps the ghosts or the entities that are causing the paranormal activity?
Jen, that is a great question. Absolutely great. And my answer is really very honest. I don't know. It could be either. I'm at the point where I'm just thrilled that there does seem to be a correlation that goes beyond what is statistically significant. I mean, you would not have, you know, this happen by chance one in a million times, probably. This many correlations over a 6-hour period. Now, whether it's being caused by the ghosts, quote, ghosts themselves, unquote, or whether it's being caused by the researchers who are reacting to the ghosts, that's a possibility too. or whether it's being caused by a change, ripples in the probability field within the haunted house, all of those things are open to speculation.
The change in the probability field. I don't understand this concept. Could you give us a quick...
Well, if I were to take a coin and flip it, you know, 100 times, how many heads do you think would come up?
Probably half.
50, right? Right. And you might maybe have 55 come up. And that, you know, that's still okay because there's something in probability statistics called standard deviation, mm-hmm. right? So, but what if you had, like, I flipped a coin 100 times and 15, I got 15 extra heads. In other words, instead of 50 heads, I got 65 heads. That would happen only one out of 2,000 and some times by chance. So that means that the probability of that happening is extremely low, kind of in the same ballpark as the probability of an apparition occurring being extremely low. So these two things get correlated. And that's what I'm calling, again, metaphorically, a probability field. I don't know that there is such a thing, but it seems that the random number generator is responding to something in the same way that it did in the Global Consciousness Project under Roger Nelson.
Very cool.
It would be very interesting to have all of the investigators that you're with while you're doing one of these investigations, have everyone focus on, say, some anomaly happening and just see if that works any, like if it does anything with the numbers. It would be really interesting to find that out too.
It would, and that's something I want to try. I've also, just as a control, let my random number generator run by itself just in my own home with nothing else going on to make sure that it's not generating a lot of anomalous readings, and it doesn't. It's completely within what one would expect a random number generator to do at that point. But take it into a haunted house and things change.
That's very interesting stuff, and I can't wait to learn more about it, too.
Thank you.
And we're out of time, and we didn't even get to try it.
Oh, no!
But will you come back on the show with us again sometime, and we can pick up this conversation again?
Absolutely. I would be delighted.
Oh, thank you. It's been such an honor to have Mike Nichols on the show tonight, and I'm fascinated in his research and this Pioneer Project he's been doing with random number generators, and now I truly want to know more. So we're going to have him come back on again another time. So we'll let you know. We'll keep you informed. Thanks so much, Mike, for coming on. Is there some place online that people can find you?
Probably the easiest place is Facebook. Look me up, just Mike Nichols, and I'm the one holding the guitar in the picture.
That's awesome. All right. Well, thank you for being on the show with us tonight.
And thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Yes. This has been Mike Nichols as our guest, special guest tonight. So remember, you can find him on Facebook. And this has been the Journey Radio Show. Thank you, everybody. Good night.